Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. Our code is ADVICES. You can use that code to get some additional savings on some high-quality supplements. Guys, welcome back to the program. If you haven't hit the subscribe button, please do. If you enjoy our content, hit the like button. It helps to spread the content so other people can see what we are doing here. Today, we've got a topic we're going to discuss. There's going to be a reclassification of HCG in the United States, and that's going to potentially affect a lot of things. So we're going to discuss that. Plus, we've got some listener questions. This is kind of big news here, and this could change a lot of things. So, I mean, first of all, so here's what I found, Dave, was with HCG. It's considered a drug right now. They are going to reclassify it as a, quote, a biologic. And now I did not know what a biologic was. This is like out of my territory. So I started reading a little bit more just last night and this morning. Found out that, so a biologic is something that is made from something that is alive. So insulin, it just simple Google search turned up to say, yes, insulin is a biologic. Insulin is oftentimes, it's not classified as one. So, it can be carried at pharmacies and stuff. But the difference is that a biologic, you have to have a unique license, a biologics license to sell this stuff. And the problem is that this is not what they're doing at compounding pharmacies. Compounding pharmacies, where all of a lot of our TRT people, you know, a lot of these doctors, they have you go through a compounding pharmacy. They put all this stuff together. And HCG is oftentimes part of that protocol. HCG is supposedly is no longer legally as of March of this year, 2020, not going to be legally available from compounding pharmacies. Now, where I found this information is from a friend who is part of a TRT program. He got an email from Defy Medical, who is the place that puts his products together, his prescription medications. Now, they say they're not going to change things. They said basically, here's just the gist of it. We want you to be aware that the FDA legislation going into effect on March 23rd, 2020 regarding availability of HCG and what you may have heard, there's a great deal of misinformation circulating on the internet. So we want to clarify to our patients what is happening with HCG. This change actually happened 10 years ago under the Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act of 2009. And takes effect March 23rd, 2020. I don't know why it took 10 years to go into effect. The FDA did not take compounding pharmacies into consideration. But basically, these guys are not going to stop selling it until they get further clarification, though they believe other compounding pharmacies may shut the production down or the sales down. What are your thoughts here?
Right. So you see, in the UK, we pretty much have one pharmacy or one style of pharmacy.
Okay.
So obviously this is a bit more unique to the States, because I'm assuming then that these compounding pharmacies can't prescribe vaccines and stuff like that because they're all bio drugs.
Yeah.
So I would assume that a compounding pharmacy is more of a supermarket version of a pharmacy and less of a medical version of a pharmacy.
Yeah.
In that they handle mainly the general, common, overall used drugs. It's different over here. And my understanding of a bio drug was that it was a live compound. So two myostatin suppressants would be bio drugs because they're live compounds. They're living drugs.
Really?
They're harvested from spleens.
Okay.
And you literally grow antibodies.
Huh.
And
okay.
Then it's the antibodies that you're injecting. So viral vaccines are all living organisms. You know, they're live viral agents that you inject to create a response and build up an immune to. So that was my understanding. I've never come across, and this may be my error. It may be more broad space, not something I've looked at in depth, but I've never come across a drug that mimics a living organism or is sourced from a living organism, in the sense of what they're saying HCG is, as being classed as a biological drug.
Hmm.
Because in its essence, it's not biological at that point. It's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, HCG is a freeze-dried powder. You know, it's not alive. It's not living.
Yeah. So the difference may be, so here what they're saying is it's from where it's created. So,
yeah.
You know, some drugs, they say, like, you know, aspirin is going to be synthetically made through a series of chemical reactions and processes that then get to that final medication, versus this, they're starting with something that's alive.
Yeah, and I get that. I don't know. There's been noise for several years coming out of the FDA about they're not happy with TRT as an industry in the States.
Okay.
They don't like the availability. They don't like that it is relatively easily available. And they don't like the numbers of people that are using it. And in general, there's been mounting pressure to be more restrictive.
Hmm.
We see the same in the UK, but it is already very restrictive over here. And we've had a few prescribing pharmacies, online prescribing pharmacies set up. And in the most part, they've struggled to continue to trade because of just being hit with huge amounts of paperwork.
Okay.
It's not that they're illegal or anything like that. It's just the controlling bodies just end up humping more and more people, and it just becomes impractical and non-cost effective to continue unless you are a private medical company, you know, with prescribing doctors, and then the price just gets insane. So I mean, the actual prescription cost of a vial of test is 10 quid,
okay,
14 quid or something it is now. But you end up paying hundreds and hundreds of pounds through a private service because you're paying for all that red tape. You're paying for all that organization. And I mean, I know a few companies that have set up and they just haven't managed to sustain trade because of the implications of all the services that they put on people that makes it completely impractical to do an online service without physically being able to sit in front of the patient and treat them as any doctor would.
Yeah.
So I don't know, there's some drive behind that. I do find it strange that there's 10 years. Maybe that was to give pharmacies 10 years to change the way they operate and you know, increase and get the necessary licenses and whatever they need to do to be able to carry it. But
it's a long time. It's a long leniency period, right?
It does. So I'm not so sure if it is driven by this desire to put TRT treatments under more control in the States and reduce the numbers of people that are jumping on it. Because it is very readily available over there, astronomically so when you compare it to the UK.
Yeah, really?
Getting hold of it over here is like hen's teeth. I mean, my supply has stopped. I can't get hold of it prescription anymore.
No kidding.
No.
It is interesting. I do feel like if you know, back when I was more familiar with what was going on in the underground world, HCG was always like the harder thing to find. You could find test and trend all day long, and then HCG would be more difficult to get, you know, from like your look, because these local UGL guys are putting this stuff together. But they aren't, you know, you in order to get that, that's not something they could do. They would have to have that shipped to them or something, you know.
Well, yeah, it's always been a prescription drug in the sense of it's always been one of those ancillaries that always was a medical product. You never saw UGL HCG.
Yeah, you do see it now, right? You see like the generic, like basically the same way that you see generic growth, you know.
Yeah, you do see it coming in from China. I still don't see labs particularly picking it up.
Yeah.
But the other thing will be interesting to see is if this clamp down in the States on a prescription of HCG affects the availability of HCG to the black market.
I wonder too, man. I wonder too. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm thinking about it. I feel like there's not a, like, I don't see a lot of HCG being sold that I don't see it coming from pharmacies so much. Like, I don't see the stuff that on the streets, you don't see the stuff that's coming from compounding pharmacies as much as you see stuff that people are making, and that, you know, the same situation that they're getting the either the generic stuff or they're getting like Prigal, you know, name brand, one of the two.
Yeah, we tend to see Gonasai or Pregnol over here.
Okay.
The two main brands, and Gonasai is the Italian one, and Pregnol's obviously the most commonly known one. We do see other versions of it, but you generally see it as a branded pharma product.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't see huge amounts of UGL over here.
Hey, how does the legality of that work with you guys? Because obviously this isn't a steroid in itself.
It falls under the Prescriptions Act, which basically states that it's a prescription drug and therefore you must have a prescription to possess it.
Okay.
It's not common for the police to press charges in the case of prescription drugs.
That's what I was just going to ask. So if somebody got, say, you know, you're working with in the legal system gets popped and he has, you know, 2,000 vials of test plus HCG, they're probably not going to charge him with the HCG, are you saying?
Yeah, they generally just go for the test because they're supplying a Class C controlled drug, which is enough, and that's what they'll focus on.
Gotcha.
The thing is, HCG possession is technically illegal.
Okay.
Whereas steroid possession isn't.
That's so weird.
Because unless it's a prescription grade steroid, which then falls under Prescriptions Act, and technically you are breaking the law. And it's very rarely prosecuted. But supply of HCG would be prosecuted in the same way as steroid would be. And if they had nothing else to go on, I'm sure they would push the HCG element of it. But that also changes the regulatory authority that deals with it.
Okay.
So steroid supply, UGL steroid supply in particular, is the territory of the police.
Okay.
When you start getting into the illegal supply of medicines, you start getting to the territory of the MHRA.
Okay. What's the MHRA? I don't know that terminology.
They are basically the medicine police.
Okay.
Vast majority of them are police officers or ex-police officers. They are much better funded.
Okay.
Because they are funded by the pharma companies.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
And they are ruthless.
Really?
They carry much more investigatory power than the police do, in the sense that I've known MHRA cases where they've had supply chains of prescription medications, and they've gone to the countries where they've come from.
Really? Wow.
Because they've got the budget to do it.
Yeah.
And they do seem to be, straight away, they will prosecute you on copyright infringements and stuff like that, which can carry a mandatory 5 years over here.
Wow. I've heard of people getting chased down for things like Viagra, you know.
Yeah.
Those are medications where they want to make the money off that Viagra. They don't want you selling it.
So the problem where it comes into with the MHRA, because the MHRA are funded by the pharma companies, because you are literally stealing out of the pharma companies' pockets.
Yeah.
Whereas UGLs, you're not. And so that's criminal from the police point of view. The MHRA are much more ruthless when it comes to prosecution than the police are.
Okay.
And so if you're getting done by the MHRA, you're in for a hard time. If you're getting done by the police, you know, you've still got a defense there, but the MHRA is so much more ruthless. And you notice it with the sentencing as well. I've noticed that MHRA cases, the sentencing tends to be higher.
Okay, really? They're going for blood.
Yeah, they don't piss about at all, and they will throw every charge they can think of at you, where the police will just go for the easiest one to prove and the one that's most cost effective.
Yeah. So I'm looking at this law, and basically it says FDA docket number, and then it has this big long number, and it just says what the changes are going to be. Protein-based drug products that had previously been applied under 505 as drugs will now be considered biologics. And that you have to have basically a different certification to carry them. It doesn't explain why they're doing it, but in the email itself from Defy Medical to this patient, it says this law was not established to limit access or be anti-compounding, but to expand access and lower prices.
How does that work? That just restricts availability, so therefore makes it more bloody expensive because you need a more specialized license, which incurs costs. That doesn't make any sense.
And I don't understand that either.
The fact that it's said almost sounds like we're saying that because that's what we're doing, so we're automatically going to say, no, that's not what we're doing. It's like, Fuddy, did you eat the last cookie? No, I didn't do that, Daddy. Immediate lie, innit? You know what I mean? It sounds weird that they feel the need to say that.
Yeah.
On a drug reclassification, when it would appear quite obviously that that is what it is, if you make the legislation on the control of a drug more complex, or you reduce the number of people that can have that drug unless they have an extra license, then you push the costs up involved in handling that drug, which in turn means you push the price of the bloody drug up.
Yeah, there's got to be something we're missing here. Because they say, as I mentioned earlier in the email, it says they called this the Biologics Price Competition and Innovation Act of 2009. So there's something where we must be missing here. It must have been something to do with not
To me, that sounds like that's driven by the legislative pharmacies against the compounding pharmacies because they're supplying drugs that these pharmacies say, well, hang on a minute. Really, they shouldn't be supplying that because they're not licensed to carry those sort of level of compounds. And as a result, it's unfair competition against us because we have to pay for all these extra licenses to carry all these drugs.
You would think it would sound like that. Now, there's some gray area with all this because, like I mentioned in the beginning, insulin is considered a biologic. You know, insulin comes from something that was from a living bacteria. That is it a bacteria or what is that considered? I'm not sure. But insulin, though, it is considered to be a biologic, though it's still sold as a drug.
Well, I mean, there is a purely synthetic insulin now, but traditionally insulin is made from pigs, isn't it?
Is that what it's made from?
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Okay.
I'm sure it's a long time since I've looked at manufacture of insulin. I'm sure the original insulin was extracted from pigs and as a result was developed from pigs. But there is now a purely synthetic form of insulin. But that's only been developed in recent years.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to see if I could find like some specifics, which I just see very basic stuff when I just do a quick search. But yeah, you know, it says from the pancreas of pigs. It says or possibly cows.
Yeah, the medical expert in the corner just shouted across cows. see, my wife's much cleverer than me, but people don't actually realize this.
She's the one who's actually pulling all the strings. She's holding cards up telling Dave what to say next. That's what it is.
Yeah, she does. She does. When it comes to medical stuff, definitely. I get shouted at and throw stuff out when I get stuff wrong. She's currently playing with squishy balls that she uses in the clinic to get people to pump to get more blood flow through the veins.
Ooh, yeah.
She says they look like my nuts. Thanks, love. I'm glad you think my nuts are so big. I'm a bit worried about the colours you think they are like, because they are some funky colours, but yeah, yellow and orange and green and all sorts of. Anyway.
So, yeah, regardless, we'll see how this unfolds. Defy Medical says that they're not going to change their practices until they get further clarification, though other compounding pharmacies may be. You know, there's some weird stuff here that they put this law into effect now when they decided to do this 10 years ago.
It just sounds like they're saying, you know what, we're doing bugger all to you, come and tell us we have to.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Yeah. They also note, too, so compounding pharmacies weren't as popular 10 years ago as they are now. So they said that they, you know, maybe they didn't take into consideration compounding pharmacies at the time of passing this legislation.
Yeah, I mean, you might see some rebuttal and some argument that it's restricting fair trade, particularly when it's an established practice for 10 years.
Yeah.
We'll see. Be interesting. I don't think it's going to have any knock-on effect over here. I do think it's just purely going to be you guys.
Yeah, I do too. And the more I think about it, I don't think it's going to affect the underground market at all, because any of the HCG that we're seeing is either going to be, like you said, it's either going to be a brand name or it's going to be shipped in from a generic from China. That those are the only things I think that we see. It's not like we see these compounding pharmacy connections or anything like that for HCG. In fact, I don't think it's really a very popular product in the black market to begin with.
Would I think agree? It's a very underutilized product, to be honest.
I could see that, yeah. All right, guys. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back, and we've got a couple questions. Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends, and they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com, and use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows. Hey, what's up, guys? We're back with Drugs and Stuff. Dave Crossland. Guys, of course, you can go over to crosslands.org.uk. Check out all of Dave's services over there. And, if you didn't see it, head over to the Advices group. I just posted up a link to a little movie called The Man with the Hammer. Dave, you were really good in that, man. Your voice, you've got that like deep, rich, you know, British voice. You've got that hammer and your loincloth. And I was terrified.
You was terrified?
I was terrified. The Man with the Hammer.
Have you watched Resident Evil yet?
God, no. I haven't watched anything yet.
Oh, for God's sake, Scott.
I don't know.
Useless.
I don't watch this stuff. I don't have time. I'm too busy talking to you.
I definitely think you need to look at your time management.
So we've got a couple of questions here. We're gonna make this a quick one today, guys. Plus, Dave's been he's got a lot of stuff, what's the analogy there? A lot of like pans on the stove. I don't know, fire on.
Irons in fires.
There you go. I like that. Dave's got a lot of irons in the fire this week.
Bloody have, yeah. It's a bit silly this week. Anyway.
So Nullitol. We have a question about this. This is something I have zero experience with. Thoughts on Nullitol the night before a competition. I my first thought was like, oh, Dave's not a guy who would have any experience with Nullitol. Turns out I was dead wrong. Dave, what's up with Nullitol? Tell me all about it.
Well, people may be more familiar with Esiclin, which is a very mild anabolic. That was very popular in the 80s and 90s. In essence, it's a sight enhancer, but it's more through irritation. So it causes a mild swelling of the muscle. You put it in lagging muscle pass before you go on stage. And Nullitol, I think, was Russian in creation. I'm not certain. It's, again, a sight enhancer. You potentially put a couple of inches on your arms. It's going to last 2-3 days. Many claim that Nullitol is much harder to detect in use than something like Synthol.
Okay.
But it's not an oil in the sense of it's not a heavy oil like Synthol that sits in the muscle and causes the muscle to enlarge that way. It causes the muscle to swell, last 2-3 days, usually peaks at around 24 hours. And then it just goes. So it's not long-term. There is a belief that with the original Esiclin that you would get some site growth. I'm not sure how well-founded that is, and I haven't seen genuine Esiclin in a very, very long time.
But it was very, very popular. And I mean, there is one of the rumors or myths around Nolitol is that Ronnie Coleman used to have it injected into the muscles in his back.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I don't know how true that is. It is, but it is one of the rumors associated with Nolitol. I haven't seen Nolitol in a very, very long time. Very long time. I experimented with it probably 8, 9, maybe 10 years ago. And it just happened to be that a mate of mine had some and he just said, here, do you want to give this a whirl? And I tried it. I threw it into my triceps, I think, before going to Body Power 1 year.
Okay.
And it was probably one of the first Body Powers I'd ever been to. So it was way before the UC injects and any of that stuff.
Did anybody compliment you on your triceps while you were there?
There was actually a friend of mine who hadn't seen me for maybe a couple of weeks, and he did say, what the fuck have you got in your triceps? Because they look huge. but it lasted a 36 hours and just slowly dissipated pretty much from within 24 hours of it going in. It was quite painful. It just felt like really bad pip.
Really? Okay.
Probably the easiest way of describing it. It's known as metamizole or something like that as a chemical name.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, actually. I'd have to have a look if there is any anabolic or androgenic action from it. I can't honestly remember off the top of my head. It's definitely not used for that, if there is.
Okay.
It's like Esiclin was originally used as, now, get this right, I believe it was originally prescribed to children.
Okay.
Because it's a very, very, very low androgen. So it does actually have an anabolic action, but it is very, very mild and it doesn't aromatize.
Yeah.
So it was used in low androgen deficiency in children. So, you know, the old Esiclin did have an anabolic action. And some people, like I say, really did feel it gave sight growth. I'm not so sure with Nolitol. I'd have to have a look. I've only ever regarded it as a sight enhancer, and I've never really looked at it as a compound in any other way.
Yeah.
Because you never see it. So, but pre-stage, is it any good? Yeah, definitely. I would give it a trial run because the information can make certain muscle groups in certain people look a bit weird.
Yeah.
So I would give it a trial run, but because it's not an oil in the way that Simphil is an oil, you're not going to have the problems associated with that.
Yeah.
It just generally gives an overall inflation to the muscle, which makes the muscle appear larger. But I'd definitely give it a trial run if you're planning on using it pre-stage, just to make sure when it is in there, you don't look odd.
Yeah.
Because it's not really a predetermine of how much it's going to affect you and how much you're going to see in a way of size growth and everything else because of the inflammation element to it. So definitely do a trial run, but as a short fix, pre-stage sort of finishing product, it's quite effective.
So yeah, I knew so little about it. I'm seeing that, okay, so it looks like it is prescribed in Portugal and Spain. It says, despite being a very popular medication in Spain and Latin America, Nolitol is not licensed for use in the UK, the Republic of Ireland, the US, or Sweden, among other countries. I read just something right now saying, like, you know, just a Google search saying that it's used for pain, which I had no idea about that. It says it's a painkiller, spasm reliever, fever reducer, also has anti-inflammatory properties, most common given by mouth or by injection. It's interesting that it could be an anti-inflammatory, yet it creates a localized swelling.
I think that's more as an oral.
Okay.
Rather than as an injection.
Okay.
I say it's something I've not had a huge look at. It popped up, give it a go, learn by experience, never came across it again.
Yeah.
I haven't had someone ask me about Nolitol in years.
Yeah.
So never had a real reason to learn any more about it, to be honest. beyond that, I'm just having a look at something now. Long-term use seems to have some potential blood toxicity issues.
They said there was a reclassification in Spain after some deaths related to it.
Yeah, it's a sulfonic acid, and I think that is what causes the inflammation. Usual sort of NSAID problems in that it's can upset the stomach, that sort of thing.
Okay.
This is interesting. I never. It apparently works as an anti-fever or a fever inhibitor when you use PGF2A. And that's one of the big problems of PGF2A is it makes you feel like absolute shit.
Hmm. We just talked about that on a recent program, too. I know very little about PGF2A.
That's an interesting drug.
We'll have to get into that in a future show, then. I'd be curious to talk about that one.
The urge to not shit yourself. It's difficult with PGF2A.
I heard you have to take that one at home. You don't want to
definitely.
Take that out in public.
And it has some interaction with acridonic acid as well.
Mm, okay, as PGF2A does, right?
Which is an inflammation marker. Mm. Yeah, okay. But yeah, in general, you don't really see it. There is some concern to blood toxicity and such like, but for someone who's using it pre-show and only as a pre-show, I wouldn't have any real issues with that, and I don't think that would be anything that would be severely an issue in any way, shape, or form. That's more for long-term use and exposure to it.
Okay. As an oral, get this, it's available over-the-counter in Russia with reports suggesting it makes up to 80% of the region's painkiller market. Nolotil is also readily available to the public in Mexico, India, and Brazil.
So there you go. If you want to get Nolotil, go to Mexico.
There you go. It sounds like they use it in place of aspirin. Basically, that's what they're. That's a like less cardiovascular, kidney, gastrointestinal effects include than things like aspirin. So,
yeah,
I'm sure it's complete. We're talking about something totally different, considering. You know, people are talking about injecting it for sight enhancement into a muscle. So,
yeah, I think it's those interactions with PGF2A and those interactions with acridonic acid that is causing that inflammation within the muscle.
Yeah. All right. Let's do PGF2A in the future, though, because I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on it.
I played with that for a while.
Growth hormone. GH application methods from sub-Q to IM to IV. What are your thoughts there, Dave?
I've never, ever used GHIV unless I was at the pharmacy receiving it over the counter, stamped, sealed, and delivered that it was a genuine pharma product.
That's a good point, yeah.
I have yet to see, apart from a couple of very rare occasions when it's been sourced from dwarves and such like, I have yet to see Pharma GH on the black market in the UK that has proved to be the real thing.
Really? Really?
I do some work very occasionally with the guy that runs Lilly Pharmacy's investigation team over here.
Okay.
And he said in every single black market Lilly growth pen that they've come across, it's been counterfeit.
You're kidding me.
It's never been genuine. He said it's contained growth hormone.
Yeah.
Just not theirs.
Wow.
So I am very, though I do know, and I have seen people where, you know, people that have been treated for dwarfism have sold GH on because they've got an excess of it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So in that case, yeah, you know, you're getting the real thing.
Yeah.
But most of the black market stuff, it may contain GH, but definitely from Lily's point of view, they really, very, very rarely see the genuine article on the black market.
That's mind blowing.
Usually a counterfeit.
That's mind blowing.
Regards sub-Q and IM, the real difference is the speed of delivery. One of the issues with sub-Q is you can get that localized reaction, which comes up as little red welts, little red itchy lumps. And that generally seems to be on which amino acid chain version you've got. It's actually listed as a common side effect by a lot of the growth hormone manufacturers that you can get these little red inflammations.
Really?
Some cases they will go if you continue to use. In other cases, they don't. Usually antihistamines are very effective, either a localized antihistamine cream or the tablets are very effective at reducing it, because it is all it is. It's a mild allergic reaction to the compound. And it just depends on which version you've got and the number of amino acids in it. Excuse me. Dose, what else were they asking? Sorry, was it just a case of the administration techniques?
Yeah, just the administration techniques, the difference that you're going to see. I know that so sub-Q is going to not peak as high, but then I've seen there's charts online, you know, where you see the peaks, and the peak's going to be higher with an IV injection. The peak is going to be a little bit less high than with an IM injection.
Yeah.
A little bit less, the higher the peak, then the faster and the less sustained from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Now I go by Dave Palumbo's suggestion of going IM. Dave had always said years ago, I don't know if he still talks about it, but he said, go IM and that you could get the most consistent amount of delivery that way. He said, versus if you go sub-Q, if you hit into the fat, he said, you know, depending on that shot, it may absorb differently versus if you go IM, it's going to be the same every time.
And the issue is that the slower it absorbs, the more you eat into the half-life of the growth, which then obviously lowers the overall effectiveness of the dose you're receiving.
Sure.
And obviously that's why IM is the most efficient delivery system, but it's also the most dangerous delivery system.
Yeah.
And the thing is as well, to be injecting IV at the frequency at which you would use growth hormone, you may as well be a heroin user.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Man, you'd be all tracked up and that'd be bad.
In the sense of the potential arterial damage you're going to receive, it would be quite high. So the alternative then would be cannulation, which again is just not practical for someone who's training.
What's that?
Where you put the cannula into the vein and leave it in. You've seen cannulation in hospital, surely, Scott.
I'm not going to do that, Dave.
Yeah, but you've seen it, surely, haven't you? Where they put a needle in with basically has a little tap socket at the end that you then inject your fluids into. I have seen drug users cannulate before now.
Yeah. Just be on an IV. Basically, Dave's saying that we're going to like just hook up. I can picture the hardcore bodybuilders now walking around the gym with like a saline bag in their growth hormone, on one of those little trees with the wheels.
You say that, but I bet there's someone out there that's experimented with drug administration via something like an insulin pump. Now, an insulin pump is cannulated into your body one way or another. Contains insulin and slowly releases it throughout the day.
Whew, yeah, just dump
it. So you could
in there, mix it in.
I am sure someone will have experimented with that delivery system at some point.
It'd be crazy, man. It'd be crazy. Let's see here. One more question we'll tackle today. This is something that we talked about before with Victoria Felkar when she was on. Steroids and SARMs for females. PCT. So is there a general recommendation for PCT for women? I remember Victoria's answer. She was against the idea of there being a general recommendation. But that said, Dave, what are your thoughts again here? We'll just go over this one quickly.
I have seen there are risks, and it's a very unstudied area of drug management. I mean, PCT in males isn't brilliantly studied, but at least we do have a vast amount of anecdotal evidence, and you know, Michael Scully has done quite a lot of documented PCT protocols with patients that have shown success. So there at least is quite a lot of anecdotal evidence and support there. Within females, the general sort of ideas are that you would use Novadex or you would use Clomid, and you'd use it for a very short, brief period of only a few days. And its interaction is very similar to that in a male, where it would block the receptors, cause the ovaries to think that there's a low level of hormones, and then kickstart the cycle. Yeah. Clomid does seem to be extremely effective for a female PCT, and you run it at 50 milligrams for 4 days. Okay. So it's very short, sharp. But there is little research into this. There is little evidence of this apart from what's been done in fertility. Mm-hmm. And so there is a lot of concerns about how safe these protocols are. I mean, technically you could use HCG on a female, but the concerns of using HCG are ovarian enlargement, and this is one of the problems that came up when everybody was jumping on the HCG diet.
Okay.
Obviously non-steroid users, this was just general housewives, right. That they were seeing increased cases of ovarian enlargement.
Really?
So there are, it is more just the fact that medically it's a very grey area, and medically it's a very non-understood area. I suspect that there will be cases that cycling for females have brought on early menopause. I mean, you know, effectively, menopause is to a degree female hypergonadism. It's where females stop producing hormones.
Sure.
So I would suspect that in the same way as we see testicular damage in males, which then creates a situation where males need TRT because they no longer produce testosterone, we will see a similar situation in females, but it will just be regarded as early onset menopause. So I don't see any, though the female endocrine system is much more robust than the male one, much more robust. And it's just in the nature of how it works. It's much more tolerant of high and low hormone levels, much more. Again, no real science in this. This is just what you see anecdotally.
Yeah.
But you've also got to look at what are the dangers of no hormone production in a female who's 24 years old or 30 years old, as opposed to what's the risk of taking Clomid for 4 days?
Yeah.
And that's down to a personal individual. But my own opinion would be that, you know, it's worth a shot. But I don't feel it's something that can be sustained. It's not like a male where you can continue with PCT treatments and to a large extent not really have any issues arising from that. That's not the case with a female. There is a much bigger downside to ongoing PCT treatments in a female, so it's definitely something that needs to be considered carefully.
I will I'll link that previous episode too, where you guys talked about that. I'll link that in this video, so anybody who wants to check that out.
And it's a very ununderstood area.
Fair enough.
But what you can say quite categorically is females do shut down, and in some cases it is severe, and it is as debilitating as it is for males.
Okay.
So that's definitely true. But in general, females will recover naturally much more easier than males will.
Okay. So tell me, Dave, how did things go? You went and checked out the venue for is it called
FitX? It is called FitX, yes.
The FitX Expo, that's the expo that a friend of the show and friend of yours, Richard Foster, is putting together with Strom Supplements.
Yeah, it's him and a gentleman called Darren.
Is this in Liverpool?
It is in Liverpool. It's at the Exhibition Centre in Liverpool, 25th to 27th of September, if I remember right.
How far is Liverpool from you, out of curiosity?
67 miles.
Okay. So, I know what Liverpool is, you know. And, of course, you know why I know. But Is it popular? Like, is there a lot going on in Liverpool outside of the fact that the Beatles came from there?
Yeah, there's a big nightlife. There's a big restaurant culture. It won an award for City of Culture a few years back.
Oh,
it's actually got quite a lot going for it. Big student community, which obviously drives the nightlife as well. One of the problems with Body Power, and I'm not talking about the content of this show or anything else, is that it's held at the NEC. Now, the NEC in Birmingham is the National Exhibition Centre. It's a huge complex of exhibition halls.
Okay.
And there is basically fuck all else there.
Okay.
So you want to go anywhere, you're in a car, you're in a taxi, and you're travelling quite some time to get near any nightlife or any restaurants.
Yeah.
Now, there are a few hotels very near the NEC, so accommodation isn't usually an issue. The nice thing about this is there is a hotel physically attached to the conference center.
Okay. Huh.
So you can stay in the hotel and go to the conference without ever actually leaving a building. Below the hotel is a Marc-Pierre White, who is a very, very famous restaurateur and chef with a very high-end restaurant. But there is opposite it, there is an Asian restaurant of some description. I'm not quite sure what it is. There's a Pizza Express. Literally 10 minutes walk is Fazenda, which is an Argentinian all you can eat meat restaurant. There's a lot of offering in the way of food. Very close to the venue. So straight away, that's a lot nicer. I'm not stuck in an armpit of a place where, you know, I can't get something nice to eat and I have to travel. I can literally just walk out of the conference center, walk over the road and have a nice meal.
Yeah.
It's on the waterfront, which, all right, yesterday when it was freezing fucking cold and blowing a gale was absolutely shit. But, you know, if the weather's decent, it's a beautiful place to be. And okay. The venue itself is very modern. It's very well facilitated. The auditorium they're using for the show is fantastic. It is really, really good. Loads of backstage space for warm-up and everything else.
That's great.
The expo's not trying to be huge. The exhibition floor space is a decent size.
Yeah.
But it's not overwhelmingly large.
Yeah.
And they've tried to... There's still a lot of things to be confirmed, and there's still a lot of athletes that I am aware that are going to be there to be confirmed. But it's like Body Power... I mean, I don't actually... I've loved and hated Body Power for years. And you know what? The more I've learned about the show... The more I understand the problems they face, the more sympathetic I am towards the show.
Okay.
But one of the things that I've never liked about Body Power is their VIP tickets, because basically you get into the show an hour early, you get a bag full of shit, and that's it.
Okay.
Where what this VIPs at this entitle you to a Friday night party with the stars.
Oh, cool.
So where you're going to be in a room with no more than sort of 150 people, and the stars of the shows are going to be there.
Nice. That sounds cool.
You have VIP lounge availability all through the show, and the lounges are up one level and overlook the exhibition floor space.
Yeah.
So you're going to be stood there in a big open balcony looking down on the show, which obviously adds some quality to paying for the VIP ticket.
Yeah.
So the VIP package is actually VIP for the first time I've ever been to an expo where the VIP package is actually going to be VIP. There's a lot of stuff planned, and if it all comes together, it will be one very, very impressive show. It will.
Nice.
But there's still a lot of things to do at the moment, and there is a lot of things confirmed that have yet to be announced, so I've got to keep me gob shut. It's looking really well. But I mean, if just basing off the venue is lovely, really nice place, and it looks like it's going to be a very good do. Really does. And there's two huge multi-stories attached to the building as well, so you're not walking from 5 miles of car park away. Just to give you an idea, I mean, the NEC is so big that they have a bus service that runs from the car parks to the exhibition halls.
Yeah. I really want to see Body Power one of these years. It's my goal to come to the UK in the next 2 years is what I decided.
I think you'll be disappointed in comparison to the UK stuff.
To
the UK, sorry, to the USA shows.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure it would be smaller. I mean, the Arnold, you know, is the Arnold's, you know, it's a couple hours. It's only a 3-hour drive for me, so I'm there every year. And I mean, that's so massive. I mean, even the Olympia looks small compared to the Arnold.
The Arnold's coming to the UK.
Is it really? No kidding.
They announced it this week. Eddie Hall's got something to do with it.
Oh, wow. That'll be interesting to see.
Huh? And, you know, a lot of people are going, well, FitX is going against Body Power. It's doing this. And it's not. Body Power is in May. FitX is in September.
Yeah.
There is enough room for both these events to work.
What's the date on that again?
25th to 27th of September.
Okay.
But there is more than enough room for these two shows to work and complement each other.
Yeah.
I believe, I'm not certain of this, but I believe that there is going to be some cross-involvement between the Arnold and FitX. Not in a major way, but just that the FitX is going to promote the Arnold in return for the Arnold promoting the FitX for next year.
Mm.
So there's going to be a promotion going on at FitX to support the Arnold.
Okay.
And in return at the Arnold's going to have a stand promoting FitX for later on in that year. So, and I see no reason why this can't happen. You know, these shows don't have to be in competition with each other. They can complement each other.
Yeah.
And FitX was chosen in September deliberately to be a good 6 months away from Body Power, so it didn't conflict with it.
For international, the only issue I see is that it will be right after the Olympia. So anybody like myself, it'll be like post-Olympia, I'm like, oh shit, now I got to start saving money. Like I got to stop spending. That's my thought, you know, right after that week of September 11th and 12th. So I can see for international, that could be potential. And I'm just looking, I'm not trying to be negative about it, you know?
No, I agree. But from a plus sign, there's a shitload of pro athletes in very good condition.
Yeah.
Available to attend.
Absolutely, yeah. They'll all be ready to head over there and look awesome, right?
And cash in on the fact of whatever they've done at the Olympia. So
sure.
There's I know a couple of the pros that are coming, which are impressive in their own right as it is.
Yeah.
But it does open that there may be potential for other ex-Olympia competitors to be coming over. Whether they do or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
At the moment, I'm aware of three.
Okay, yeah.
They're a very good standard, but I think what is nice about this is within what they've done with the athletes so far is within the contracts, they've written in that they have to be involved with the public.
Okay, interesting.
So, you know, these VIP lounges and these meet and greet things, they have to be there. They have to meet the public. They have to meet the fans.
Hmm.
And that's nice because I've been to too many where they disappear. They're on a stand, yes, but as soon as they go from that stand, they just disappear into ether.
Yeah.
And you don't see them and you don't get to be involved with them.
Yeah, that's not fun.
There's a CrossFit event. There's a women's and men's open class strongman event, which may well become linked to Giants Live.
Hmm.
Whether it does or not, I don't know. There's definitely, I think there's going to be an army assault course and there's a few other bits and bats going on. There's a bodybuilding show, which is obviously the Strong Classic. The winner, the overall winner of that is getting flown out to the States to compete in a show in the States.
Oh, fun.
So that's a nice little package.
Yeah, that's fun.
Though probably financially it's no greater than winning a lump of prize money, it's got much more quality to it, the fact that you're going to get flown out and treated as a, you know, a sort of a high level bodybuilder to compete in an American show.
Absolutely. Yeah, that would be a fun, I mean, that would be like, that'd be something you'd never forget, you know what I mean, if you want like that. Yeah.
You'll remember that far more than you would remember him winning £1,000.
Sure. Well, listen, hey, let's continue talking about this topic as it gets closer. I think people will be more interested to hear about it, you know?
I've probably already said a load of shit I'm not supposed to say. I'll have to be very careful.
All right. Well, in that case, then, let's stop here. And yeah, we're gonna cut it because Dave, you've, as we said, you have irons in the fire. It's early. Mm-hmm. I haven't even eaten yet, so I have to go and make my meal one. I'm dying over here at this point.
I've got two phone calls and a set of bloods to look at, and then go meet a client, and then go out and meet another client after that. Yeah, I've got a busy day today.
Excellent. Well, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, I'm Scott McNally. As I mentioned earlier, head on over to crosslands.org.uk. Of course, check out our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. If you haven't hit the subscribe button yet, please do click the notification bell. If you enjoyed this show, hit the like button. And Dave, we will see you next time. Thanks a lot, brother.
My pleasure, man.